Hi, and welcome to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Lee Peterson. Lee Peterson's new book of poems, Rooms and Fields, Dramatic Monologues from the War in Bosnia, won the 2003 Stan and Tom Wick Poetry Prize. It was selected by Jean Valentine and published by Kent State University Press. She has read her work widely at Reed College, Sarah Lawrence College, the Jimmy Carter Center in Atlanta, and at prisons through the Prison Arts Initiative in Alabama. She is currently a lecturer in English at Penn State University, Altoona. Hi, Lee. How you doing?
Hi, Jan.
It's great to have you. So you're going to begin with poems from your book, Rooms and Fields.
I just want to say quickly, since it is a series of dramatic monologues, that is, each of the poems is in a fictional speaker's voice, and the setting is the war in Bosnia. The name of an individual often identified their ethnicity, so the names are significant. And a name like Fatima or Muhammad would be clearly Muslim, though some are deliberately ambiguous. Most of the voices in the book are Bosnian Muslims. So I'll read the first one. The National Library, which was bombed on August 25th, 1992. The National Library, Sabia. I had decided to study history at university the day the library started burning. I was loaded down with books on my way to my parents' house. People darted, they jerked like fish, caught on a huge dry stone. I stood and watched for the longest time. Pieces of paper lit on my shoulders and hands. It was August, my birthday. I'd been thinking how my mother would cry when she saw I'd cut my hair. I'd light a cigarette. I'd wait. I'd been thinking how to tell my father, history, Papa, not mathematics, not physics. My father mistrusted history. I stood at the bridge preparing my speech, the leather straps dug into my shoulders. I stood until the fish settled on their stone, until ash gathered at my feet, until it covered my face and the rest of me. There was a girl, Zlata Filipovic, who published sort of her Anne Frank diary of the war, and this uses her name and seeing her from the outside rather than the inside. Zlata on the outside. Rahima. Hurry, hurry, through the outside. Hurry, from inside to inside. Hurry, hurry, hard rain from the hills. The outside can catch you, child. Hurry. I wanted to definitely have a variety of voices, not just victims, not just perpetrators, people in between, so this is one of those poems. Morning, Petra. In the mists, we move them through the orchard, or the fields, the long grass sharp, while my son and his boys sleep in the hills until noon. The strangers can't stay but to take some bread. Then my husband and I reach a hand and hard whisper, God go with you, go. Then, like torches, they light and turn. They burn, I tell you, like stones. This one is actually in the voice of Slobodan Milosevic, who's affectionately known as Slobo. And it sort of speaks to the brainwashing, I think, that happens when leaders convince a people to attack themselves, attack each other in that way, that charisma and calling to arms. So there is a chorus as well. The teacher, Slobo with chorus. Your fathers have suffered, and you are their sons. Bright futures, dark returns. You think you know them, that they are your friends. Bright futures, dark returns. But they will steal your very skins. Bright futures, dark returns, and crush your memories like your bones. Bright futures, dark returns, I tell you, you have suffered for their sins. Bright futures, dark returns. Bright futures, dark returns.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Lee Peterson. He's reading from her new book, Rooms and Fields, Dramatic Monologues from the War in Bosnia. I know that you spent some time in Bosnia. Can you talk about some of that and just how you came to write this book? I mean, it's a very focused book.
Well, interestingly enough, I only went to Bosnia after having basically completed the manuscript. It started sort of not as an academic exercise. That sounds colder than it was, but it did start in graduate school, primarily through research, though much of that was first hand interviews that I read, accounts as well as histories. And but I went after the manuscript was mostly completed, which was sort of terrifying and enlightening and affirming, because I was very moved, obviously, by just being in that air and seeing those shattered homes and sometimes people, but was welcomed with such grace and appreciation, and my work itself was welcomed and applauded, and that felt like an amazing affirmation, and made it feel worthwhile, not just as a message I was giving to my home audience, but as something that I could contribute to that history for those who actually lived it. Mm-hmm. So
how did you just begin to come to the form of dramatic monologues? Was it always in that form? Or?
Well, yeah, the first poem that I wrote, the issue that drew me to this history in particular, even though the war was past by the time I was reading it, reading about it, I mean, I had lived through it as well as, you know, in the news, and we all saw what had been going on there, but was the issue of rape in particular, which was actually, because of this war, declared a crime against humanity explicitly for the first time at The Hague. So it does have this very significant role in that war and in our larger history. But mass rape was such an issue. And I just, as risky as it was to try and live my poetic self through these other eyes, I felt like there was no other way. You know, it just was almost a formal necessity. I felt I couldn't do it justice unless I got inside those bodies and minds. And, you know, so the dramatic monologue was just there. You know, that was just the only way. And I, again, was sort of terrified to try it as a form, but I did the one poem and I presented it to people, and they seemed to think that it worked, and that gave me kind of the courage to keep going, and it just grew, you know, it just took on this life of its own and became a book and became a manuscript. So,
okay, how about more poems?
Okay, actually, I'll read that first poem that I wrote, which has obviously gone through some revision, but in the title, Foča is the name of a town, and it's one of the places that some of the most sort of brutal acts of mass rape were going on, and there were camps and all of that. So it's in the voice of a girl watching her mother being raped in their apartment. Letter from Foča. Melica. The one on top set his teeth. Mama seemed to me the stronger one even then. The shutter slats broke the room into lines, like her fingers covering my eyes in the street. Under her, the slipcover gathered, the little roses closed in her fist, They took their time. They took turns, drinking out of my favorite cup. I thought I would eat my tongue. The wooden feet of the sofa creaked against the wooden floor, and when they decided it was done, Mama lay as if sleeping, then crossed the room and beat the door they'd left open until night came, until we dreamed that pounding. There's another one with a dream in it. Love song for Ibrahim, Zada. Late summer, I'd bring him lunch in the field, my Ibrahim. The closer I came, the wider the rows stretched on. And always a murmur, the rustle of stalks. I thought, but never asked, how does it feel to hold the wood, to swing the blade and swing again, Ibrahim? Does it become your body the corn? Last night, I dreamt he found me in the field. The moon sat high, the waxy leaves silver. The scythe was gone, and his hands, when he took mine, felt soft as a child's. I'll do one other. There's these three dream poems in a row. I'm doing them out of order, but... The Dreamer, Kasim. They kept you awake, or you just couldn't sleep. Such sounds. Either way, it was the worst part. You wouldn't think so, but you can't know such things beforehand. You dream all the time. You dream while you're awake. Sometimes it still happens. Now, of course, I push it down. But then, at the time, I'd walk around dreaming. Not all the dreams were bad. Sometimes I'd see my old rooster, mean little bastard. Sometimes I'd see my new stove. It was new. Now that was a crime. You see, I was not a violent man. But since the camp, if I had one of theirs in my hands, even a baby, even a girl, I'd tear off its arms. I'll follow that one with something with some hope in it, called Hope. Hope. Farah. Jars of fruit I'd dust to keep the tops a gold shine. Clean windows to let the sun warm the carpets and the wood, and show the dust floating in chutes and streams. The hush, hush, hush of the broom on the boards. Hazim playing in the alley, the sweet rise of bread filling the rooms. Even my mother's low nagging. It's a song she's teaching me. A song I'll learn.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Lee Peterson. She's reading from her new book entitled Rooms and Fields, Dramatic Monologues from the War in Bosnia. I want to ask you about this idea of, you know, poet as recorder, reporter, and the relationships between, that and poet as historian, because, I mean, in the back of your book you have, I noticed you have an extended, notes section where you, reference historical information, language information. What kind of issues came up when you were putting this book together in relation to poet as historian or poet as maker of poems that don't have to be true, et cetera?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting you used the word true. That was something in graduate school my mentor, Suzanne Gardner, bandied that word about, and all of its various meanings, And I think she often attended to that word in the sense of true in a kind of bodily, deep, resonance, you know, you can just feel if something is on or if it's missing the mark. And, you know, I think that there's that kind of woodgy sense of something working. That's just the magic, and you can't put your finger on it. But you need to do, especially if you're doing something historically based, the research, or the truth won't come out. It won't. You can't quite get there. You know, I think it has to do, as a poet, I felt the experience was very much about going deeply inside my kind of heart and soul, and asking these questions of myself and mining the darkness of my human nature, not just the light, you know, and that this landscape of war and genocide forced me to do that. But I couldn't do it without the details, you know, and we live in this poetic world, Pound and HD's poetic world of, you know, imagism, and it all has to be grounded, I think, in the real, and even more so with a project like this. So the research for me was so necessary, but I also think as a reader, there's a richness there, you know, and that in particular, this history and many histories go untold. I mean, I don't mean to carry the torch to be like the great triumph of the Bosnian cause at all. But I think that was one of the things that drew me to this history. Also, it seemed to be a history that had been misrepresented in the media at the time, and for our own reasons, you know, it's all very complicated and we're told certain things and not told others. And so it's often, you can't see what those were until you look backwards, you know, so to also to pick a war that was finished, you know, that had been a few years. I started in 1999, the ceasefire was in, and the peace accords were in 1995. So it was still fresh, certainly, and it's still, the peace is still being made there, but it was something I could look back on in a way that the war in Iraq, I don't know how to see it. You know, I'm writing about it, but it's a different experience. But the stories of war and of struggle, and I think they have these similar common elements, and to explore one history allows you to see another. You know, as soon as the flag started waving after September 11th, being so aware of this history, it was so prominent in my mind. Immediately, I just thought nationalism has such a dark side, and I knew to see that. And if you know a history, you can see other things coming and look out for them. And mm-hmm. So...
As a human being who is a writer, it seems that you're drawn towards writing about the human condition, and you know, I'm thinking of your work in the prisons too as a different kind of war that you address. Are you writing any prison poems?
No, I mean, I went and worked, a friend of mine runs a prison arts program down out of Auburn University in Alabama, and that's, I went as a visiting writer to a few different facilities, but that's really her life's work. I mean, I kind of visited that world, but nonetheless, what was exactly the question about the prison? Just how does that connect to
I'm just wondering
the whole thing,
you know, how we arrive at our subject matter, and that, you know, there's a lot of, you know, I feel, you say this is not your mission to represent the Bosnian struggle, and yet there's a sense of urgency in the book, as you talk about it, there's a sense of urgency. So I feel like, and knowing about your work in the prisons, it seems you know, there's something driving you beyond poetry.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, any, you know, social justice in all of its varieties. Since I was a kid, you know, I was this weird child whose heroes were Martin Luther King and Gandhi, you know. I mean, I've always just been drawn to those things and not always known how to manifest it. I mean, I think I am an artist, and that's a pretty quiet life in a lot of ways, and I need that. It's just the way I'm built. But to be able to find ways as an artist to connect to larger issues of social justice in different scenarios, it makes it all, for me, just work. It makes it meaningful. I'm not content to write poems about what I see out my window. I want to stretch in just my experience. Yeah, as a human being, it makes me see more broadly and live in a more alive and true way. I mean, the darkness of ourselves and of the world is necessary to look at straight on. You know, it's not, avoiding it does nothing but robs us of our own humanity. So why not always just try and throw yourself against that and in it whenever and however you can? I guess that's, I don't always have the strength to do it, you know, but I find it necessary and essential.
Okay. How about more poems?
Okay. There are only a couple in rhyme, and this is one of them. The harder voices were ones I seemed to be drawn to, more structured forms. Soldier, boy, Mufid. I set my back against a tree, my knife to peel a plum. My rifle lay right next to me, right next to me, my gun. When crows came black across the sky, around me all was green. I did not want to stand or sink. I wanted just to scream. This is one of a couple prose poems. The dog, Mehmed. My landlord beats his dog. It's not a bad dog, only untrained and in need of some attention. In the mornings when I'm drinking my coffee, I can hear him beating it with a stick. The dog whines and barks when he does this. Once my landlord leaves for work, it howls. I'm home most of the day. I'm old, I no longer work, and my back is gone. Often I walk to meet my friends in the afternoons, the ones who are still alive. We sit in the cafe and drink coffee and play chess or talk in the park. In spring, I can see the dog from my window, chained outside the house out back. Even asleep in the sun, it twitches, as if it dreams of the beatings. I think sometimes it wants me to set it free. Sometimes it looks at me like it's asking. This one, Breadline, is about a breadline. It's called the Breadline Massacre. There were a lot of pensioners in line in Sarajevo waiting for bread, and shells hit the area and killed many people. One important detail about it, after the massacre, Vedran Smailovic, the principal cellist of the Sarajevo Opera Orchestra, played Albanino's Adagio in G minor, a piece which was actually found unfinished in ruined Dresden after World War II, and he played it for 22 consecutive days to in memoriam for the 22 people who'd been killed. Breadline, Hassan. Our shoes are stiff for winter, although it's spring. Inside the leather, our feet press down, bones to the hard earth. My hunger feeds my thirst, its burning spreads like sleep. Believing it will end soon, I close my eyes standing and say nothing to my friends. Lead fingers at the ends of my palms, lead hands. Days and nights we wait in line. We taste the bread that never comes. This is the torturer's tongue, passing over us here as in our homes, through doorways or windows, through walls, through the miles of my childhood I keep close. I've made a map of its roots. I trace in my pocket, as always when I'm cold. Doesn't this night seem darker than any in winter? And isn't it May? Now, a young man plays among us in line, and on his strings, hands like horses. I remember this song, but not its end. All those poems were actually from the first section, Rooms. I'll read one from the middle section, The Bridge. The Bridge. Vladimir. Between you and me, I sweep the houses clean. With just this yellow straw, this one broom. I do it so the others can move in. I tell you the floor of this house is 100 floors. This house, I tell you, is 100 houses, more. To pass the time, I watch the broom rake lines in the dust. I sing songs or look over their things. Pictures, books, children's toys. No TV sets, no VCRs. These were taken first, of course. And sometimes between us, I stop my work and weigh my palm in my palm. So light, I think. What could I have done, one man? I'll read the first of the last section, Fields. Nettles. Fatima. The guns have become... The guns have become like friends. Blunt comfort, we steal our thumbs. The guns have become metal right. The chairs we choose to leave alone, with desks and heels riveted down, riveted dumb. Like children, the chairs we sit in or move from. And underneath, what's gone, wink of teeth, clap of sun, is gone.
The poetry of Lee Peterson reading from her book, Rooms and Fields, Dramatic Monologues from the War in Bosnia. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Jan.
You've been listening to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a bi-weekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the Arts Entertainment News Weekly, published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty and Ellen Wadey. Our sound engineers are Joseph Wilk and Lauren Wolf. Please tune in every Tuesday night at 7 for Prosody here on Independent Public Radio, 91.3 WYEP.